Welcome to Herb W. Morgan's Slaying Bulls and Bears, a podcast about economics, markets, investing, politics, and profit. Every Monday, in less than 20 minutes, Wall Street portfolio manager Herb W. Morgan distills the complex and complicated into the simple and sensical. Here's Herb now.
Hello, everybody. It's Monday, January 15th, 2024. I'm Herb Morgan, Senior Managing Director and Chief Investment Officer at Cantor Fitzgerald Managed ETF Portfolios. This is my weekly economic and market commentary. The presentation has been prepared by us, Cantor Fitzgerald Investment Advisors, for use with investors and financial advisors who are each expected to make their own investment decisions. Nothing contained in this presentation should be treated as investment advice. There are no recommendations for the purchase or sale of any securities. Let's get into week two of 2024. We had a pretty good move, actually, in the S&P 500, so it was a limited move, mostly to large cap U.S. stocks with secondary benefit from large cap international stocks. Small cap stocks gave back a little, emerging markets gave back a little. Interestingly, though, as we progress, we're going to talk a little bit about more about China. There was a lot of scuttle over the weekend and some of the research terminals that I frequent about some bullish option bets on China. And maybe perhaps 2024 is finally the year of a big rally there. We'll see. Fixed income caught a bid, a pretty strong bid. You can see the aggregate bond index up about 0.9%. High yield strong, no signs of recession. One of the great telltale signs of a pending recession is when high yield yields go higher, returns go down, the spread to the 10-year treasury gets wider and wider. But everything else looked pretty fine, we're at least 2 weeks in. There wasn't a ton of economic data last week, although we got into earnings season. We had pretty good earnings from a lot of the financial names, and Delta Airlines was another one that had really good earnings. But let's start with consumer credit. In November, consumer credit was estimated to go up by about $8.6 billion. It did far better than that. Spotlight. Here we go. You can see over here on the right, $23.7 billion, which was far, far greater number than expected. Most of that came from the revolving side. So that showed some confidence. Pretty significant confidence on the part of American consumers. Small businesses are a little more optimistic, still not very optimistic, but a little more. Small Business Optimism Index rose from 90.6 to 91.9. That was better than expected. It is also the highest reading of the last 14 months. So go back to 2023, it matches. Matches that. Sentiment was a little better on sales, earnings, and the economy. I think a lot of that is coming from the moderation and some of the inflationary pressures that we've been seeing in the overall economy. The trade deficit for the month of November fell pretty substantially. I mean, not substantially, from 64.5 down to 63. The word substantially came from where we were back in early 2022. You can see we've come down now. We're matching what were peak levels back in 06, 07, 08. Why do we watch the trade deficit? Well, if you run a deficit, that subtracts from GDP. So if you're running $60 billion a month, let's say on average, that's $720 billion a year out of an economy that's in the high 20 trillions. So it's significant, it's substantial. There's arguments pro and con for it. Some people like having a trade deficit because we're sending less money, we're buying more goods cheaply, et cetera. But then the currency gets stored overseas, which finances our budget deficit. So we can get into that another time. Weekly initial claims for unemployment, relatively unchanged, 202,000. The estimate was for 210. If a recession is imminent, this number is coming up. This goes back to 21, the COVID recession, where we're looking at weekly claims of 800,000. Of course, it was much, much higher. This is the tail end of the COVID claims. Prior to that, it was much, much higher than 800,000. But we're at 200,000. That's a very, very low number by historic standards. And given the size, the growth and the size of our labor force, it makes it even more low on a relative basis. We got inflation readings last week, both CPI and PPI. The CPI disappointed. The estimate was for an increase of 0.2. That's the blue line here. But it was up 0.3 in the year over year, which is the blue line, 3.4. Estimate was 3.2. So that was a little disappointing. Core, 3.9. The estimate was 3.8. Still, you can see both coming down, coming down. The Fed's measurement of inflation is one called core PCE, but they're going to track about the same. They want core PCE below 2%. Producer price index actually beat, was better than expected. It fell. It's the second month in a row that the the PPI has fallen. The year over year is well below the Fed's preferred measure of 1.3%. And then the core, backing up food and energy, was unchanged. Three consecutive months of stable core producer prices and below the Fed's 2% target at 1.8%. But again, the Fed, they look at everything, but they measure whether or not they're meeting their objective by looking at core PCE. That's personal consumption expenditures, which we'll bring you when that's reported as well. One of the things I mentioned at the beginning was we think 24 could be a pretty good year for China. As many of you know, we own Chinese equities in our portfolio via a U.S.-listed exchange-traded index fund, ETF. And just to give you kind of a very high macro look at where we are, the U.S. has done incredibly well. And based on 12-month forward estimated earnings, we're still at almost 20 times earnings. Now, that's no reason to run and sell. It's just a reflection of how the market values the U.S. companies, the U.S. economies, given the future, et cetera. But China has had a lot of troubles with their economy. They've had trouble with their property market. They've had regulatory trouble in their large with technology names. The consumer never really recovered from COVID in China. And it's caused Chinese equities to get really, really cheap. So you can see the multiple there, about 9.9 times. And look at the GDP growth estimates. U.S. is expected to grow 1.3% this year. That's not much. China is expected to grow 4.5. Now, this week, China will report their full year 2023 GDP number. And there were some, as I mentioned earlier, some very bullish option bets in some U.S.-listed China ETFs last week. Is that a tradable event for any of us? Probably not. We're long-term investors. But it could signal that perhaps we've gotten to the peak of pessimism. And I always believe that that's when market bottoms are made. When the last optimist becomes a pessimist, when investors that are positive on something throw in the towel, that's how you get to a bottom. And the top is reached when the last pessimist finally jumps on board and becomes an optimist. There's no more incremental buyers to lure into a market. Well, there may not be many more incremental sellers to lure out of Chinese equities. They've really suffered the last few years while the economy has gone through some changes. So we think the pessimism may have peaked. That could be a sign that 24 could be a good year. The Chinese government's squeeze on big tech seems to be waning. The property market woes that are well-known, well-dispersed in the marketplace. It's been over 2 years since the Chinese property market meltdown began. And the last thing that needs to happen is for Chinese consumers to come out of hibernation. As I mentioned earlier, they've never really came out strong after COVID and the COVID-related lockdowns. I put on here, just for comparison purposes, another prominent, significant emerging market. India has just been on a tear and done a lot of great things, but their market's even more expensive than the U.S. Now, their GDP is expected to grow almost 7% this year. That may just be justifying that multiple. But then look at the interest rates, too. In the U.S., you want risk-free, you get 4%. It's the 10-year treasury. In China, it's only 2.5%. In India, it's 7%. So all interesting. We like China for a small portion of the portfolio. We hope you do, too. And maybe it'll be a good year for us in 2024. In terms of economic data this week, I've got New York State manufacturing, which has been below zero range for extended period now. Manufacturing is not the driver of economic growth in our country in 2023 for sure. And we need a rebound in 24 because if non-manufacturing or services rolls over, then that's when we finally move into recession. We've got retail sales, import and export prices expected to both be negative. That helps the consumer and the PCE number. Industrial production and capacity utilization, housing sentiment, Fed's book ahead of their next meeting, the beige book, weekly jobs claims, housing starts, permits, Philly Fed, which is sort of a sister report to Empire State, which we'll get on tomorrow morning, Tuesday. I'm giving you this on Monday night. Consumer credit for January and existing home sales all coming out next week. Don't forget, this is available as a podcast as well. If you're just driving in the car and you want to just listen to it and not see all the beautiful slides and charts and graphs, you can do it that way. It's on all of the different podcast formats. So thank you very much. I look forward to being back to you again in one more week.
Thank you for listening to Slaying Bulls and Bears. If you'd like to download the slides for this week's podcast, go to www.efficient-portfolios.com and join our mailing list. Don't forget to subscribe to our YouTube channel, rate us online, and share with a friend if you found this helpful. See you next week!